Hi, and welcome everyone to episode 200 and... Wait, what is it again? Patrick, help me out here. 228 of the Blind Bargains cast. Hi, I'm Joe Steinkamp, and I'm here with my pal, Jay? Where's Jay? Gigi? Is Gigi here? Gigi? J.G. Thirlwell. Ooh, J.G. Thirlwell is here. Martok, one of the greatest Klingons. Oh, man, I am so excited. Deep Space Nine must be missing. Wait, no, not him either. Rats. I mistook this big pile of pizza boxes as J.G. Thirlwell. How could I do? Where did we get all these pizza boxes so soon? We haven't even been here. And I've got to get a broom to get those cobwebs down from these corners. Wow, this is a rusty, dusty place that I need to clean. Make a note here and must clean studio or find someone who can save. Got it. Yeah. Now that that's out of the way, I can tell you that we've got our penultimate interview from season 2024. JJ has an opportunity to sit down and talk to somebody from the exhibit hall floor. Next week, we've got our last interview. Who could that possibly be? Do you have any ideas? If you do, send them in to feedback@blindbargains.com. We would love to hear your thoughts and your predictions on who our final interview could possibly be. Now, JJ and I have talked about assistive technology for a long time. 14 years, give or take a few. And we've talked about all sorts of crazy technologies. I mean, we've talked about things you wear that's going to help you with your mobility. We've talked about all sorts of wild robotics. And we've talked about, oh, I don't know, things that were going to be amazing in the future. You know, it sounds like science fiction, but it isn't. We're actually starting to see a lot of movement in the EBRF and multi-line braille display space. And we're going to hear today about a company out of Michigan, because of course, if it's in Michigan, Jay would know about it. But we're going to hear today about a company out of Michigan that's got a really neat way of doing braille with bubbles. To be honest, the first time I heard about bubbles in JJ, I just thought it was like him standing in the exhibit hall with like a wand and a trail of bubbles behind him. But then I found out that it wasn't that. And as cool as that might be, this is even better, as we're going to learn about how air bubbles could be a future way for you to read Braille. Before we do that, I want to tell you that these interviews that you've been hearing from CSUN have been done on Zoom recorders. In fact, over the years, most of our recordings have been done on Zoom recorders. Almost all of the ones I've done for the last too long of a period of time from CSUN have been on Zoom recorders. But those Zoom recorders in the past, garbage. You know why? Because they didn't talk. These new Zoom recorders, they have spoken prompts on them, and it makes it so much easier to know when I've screwed up. I mean, like screwed up a recording, not screwed up during a recording. That's pretty obvious. Patrick's pretty good at reminding us all about that. But these new Zoom recorders allow us to be able to hear what we're about to record and do certain things while on the device. Here's Jay to tell you more about it.
Many of our podcast interviews are being recorded using new accessible voice recorders from Zoom. Zoom has released three new essential voice recorders, the H1, H4, and H6 Essential, all providing unparalleled audio quality and accessible features like a voice guide that helps you know what menu option you are on when you're moving through the menus. They're available now at atguys.com, ranging from the simple but powerful H1 Essential for $99 up to the H6 Essential for $299, which has the capability of recording up to 6 tracks at once. We love them. I use them for our podcast out in CSUN in Anaheim in 2024, and we think you will as well. Again, you can go to atguys.com to learn more about the Zoom accessible voice recorders or call 269-216-4798. CSUN 2024, sitting in the side of the exhibit hall. I'm here with Alex Russomano, CEO, and Sheila Amorin, CXO of New Haptics, a Michigan-based company, proud to say that, and developers of a new Braille display technology. I'll let you both tell me about it, but welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
You probably can figure out whose voice is who's there from listening. I guess I'll just start with you, Alex. Maybe tell me a little bit about New Haptics, and you both just cut each other off or do whatever you want, but tell us a little bit about the display and what you're showing.
Yeah, I could tell a little about the origin story. So we're a startup company based in Ann Arbor. We spun out of the University of Michigan back in, I think, 2018 officially. But the company and its kind of inception goes all the way back to my PhD, which I did at the University of Michigan, where Sheila was one of my co-advisors, and our other co-founder, Brent Gillespie, who's not here with us today, he was my advisor. And yeah, in my time there, we developed a brand new technology that could be used for refreshable Braille. Spent many years perfecting it and trying to get it to a good place. And finally, in the last couple of years, we've been able to really start to pull together a device that we're feeling really good about sharing. And so that's probably what you felt today and have had a chance to feel so far.
Sure. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But what got you in specifically to Braille technology? Was it something at the university that you experienced, or why this?
Sheila will definitely be the one to talk more about this. But I mean, interestingly, I came at it originally from a technical side. So when I first got to the university, I was kind of very curious and trying to figure out what I wanted to specialize in. And this project was just one thing that came up. And I was, of course, super interested in the application and just the potential for it. And so I really came at it from the technical side, and then of course fell in love with the application space and really the idea in general. And so a lot of that stems from just Sheila's passion for it and just getting to know more and more about the blind community.
So I definitely hear the passion. So Sheila, you're a professor at U of M.
Yes, a joint appointment. I teach in the Performing Arts Technology program in the School of Music, but I also work in the School of Information. So kind of crossing those two areas. And I suppose my passion, as Alex said, comes from the fact that I'm visually impaired myself and use Braille, but I also want to access information that's not very easy to speak. So things like waveforms for sound editing, or, you know, graphics for working with statistics, or all sorts of things that, you know, all of us have had experience trying to deal with using screen readers, but are much better suited to sort of spatial display using a tactile display or something like that. So that's really where I came from.
So as a professor, did you reach out to students to say, I have an idea for a project, or how did this get going on your end?
So it was myself and Brent Gillespie, Professor Gillespie. We had worked together when we were both at Stanford, and actually we had worked together on a haptic display, so a different kind of feel-based display for doing waveform editing and also just making Microsoft Windows so that you could actually feel the objects on the screen. Now, it's not the same technology that we're doing now, but we'd worked together all that way back, and we still had this idea that there was a better way to do this. And so when I moved to Michigan, Brent was already here, we put in a National Science Foundation grant to develop this idea of bubbles driving dots, if we could, because Brent had some related project where he'd tried this out for another application, and we were like, this should work for Braille. And so that's where we got started, and we eventually got that project funded, and that's what funded Alex's PhD.
Very cool. So that's the culmination of that is what you're showing here today. So what are we showing here?
Culmination, what is that, 12 years in the making?
Something like that.
Lifetime. It's still in development, too, so maybe not even the culmination yet.
But it took a while. I mean, obviously, I did my PhD focused on the technology, and then what we have here today is very particularly, we have a 3-line by 24 cell multi-line Braille display, and it's working in a box on the table right beside me here. And
showing real Braille.
Yes, exactly. And I think we've gotten some really encouraging feedback from people, you know, even saying that, you know, it feels just like the piezos. And so that's just really reassuring. It's taken quite a long time to get there. And the Braille is the core of what we're trying to do, and it's the most important part. And once we've gotten to that point as of late, we've had a lot of fun now dipping into just a lot of the interesting things that Sheila is really passionate about, of the user experience side of things, and trying to figure out, now that we have a multi-line display, how can we make it useful? You know, how can we bring it to users and improve their experience in using Braille?
So as you've been going along with the project, what are you learning about? What is making this display different than others? Because there's a lot of these that are popping up. You're across the hall from one of the hub. That's some great booth planning there from CSUN. But there's a lot of different displays out there, so you're going to have to differentiate yourself for a very limited market. So what do you see as some of your advantages?
Go for it, Sheila.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the fact that we've integrated a touch display for gesture recognition, things like double tap, with the Braille display, so it's all there under your finger, if you like. And that means that, you know, instead of having to worry about routing a cursor, you just double tap where you want the cursor to come to. So that takes all of the complexity out of that. And it allows, eventually we'll be able to do a more complex set of gestures for scrolling and zooming and doing all the kinds of things that you can do on an iPhone, but bringing them to a Braille display. So you really have a sort of touch in, touch out experience that's hopefully much less complicated than things which have to use buttons to allow you to find things or go places on the display.
That's an intriguing idea, right? Because your current setup, if you have an iPhone and then you're Bluetooth to a Braille display, you're using the Braille display, you know, with one line for one thing, and then a whole bunch of commands that, you know, some people are really good at memorizing, but not everyone is, and there's tons of them. And, you know, kind of being able to transpose some of that over to, hey, I can just have my hands on one thing. You know, you might not have every single iPhone command, but you can have the basic interaction in one device, right?
Yeah. And even just editing, like, you know, just, oh, I made a mistake here, and double tapping where here is, and the cursor comes to you and you can just fix it, you know.
Feel like you need the Braille gesture, the scrub gesture, but for erasing, so you know, like
absolutely.
When you take your finger and you try to...
We totally do, like you used to do on an old Perkins when you try to get rid of the dots.
Yeah, smush them down.
Smush it.
But the other thing that excites me is that, you know, Braille is used for a lot of codes that don't fit on one line, like math and music and all sorts of scientific codes. And when you can actually write those out and lay them out properly in space, like they need to be laid out, like you would do if you were brailing them using a Perkins, that's the kind of thing we need with a display like this, a multi-line display that allows you to say, to, you know, touch a part of the screen and go, I want to put this here, I want to align this with this. It doesn't seem like rocket science, but nobody's really done it before.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that definitely comes from the technology side of things and just being able to have a very, you know, capable, I mean, we're still obviously working on it and it has a long way to go, but the underlying technology to support, you know, multi-touch and gesture support, it is possible with our technology. And so we're just super excited to even have, you know, today we've got some examples of double tap and its potential use in interaction with Braille. And already people are pretty excited about it. So that's been fun to see.
Very cool. Now you mentioned the technology. One of the big challenges as multi-line Braille displays are becoming a thing is that screen readers were never built for them. They were all built for single line displays. And I know there's been a bit of a work with the EYRF working group and some others to try to work on this, but what are you finding as you try to interface this with a screen reader like JAWS or NVDA or VoiceOver?
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna have to be a team effort. I mean, we're at this point trying to reach out and work with screen reader companies to try to figure out, now that multi-line is coming and it's inevitable, how can we get, you know, the screen reader software to really leverage the power of multi-line? And that's ultimately what is going to make it useful, right? So, I mean, right now, as it stands, screen readers are only really useful for single line. Yep. They're just designed for single line. And so even with our display right now, sure, we can make it compatible with JAWS, but it's not, in doing so, going to leverage the real benefit of having multiple lines. It's just going to be one line spilled over to the next is kind of how we've been thinking about it. But what we found is these companies are definitely very interested, and they want to work with us and other companies because they know it's coming. You know, they want to be there and be able to support multi-line because it will change for the better how blind people can use Braille. I mean, it's just, that's it.
I think. But I mean, there's a fundamental thing that, you know, the fundamental difference too, which is that screen readers are currently designed to follow focus, right? So they bring you to where the focus is, and then you have to kind of figure out the context for yourself. On a Braille display, you put your hand down and you find all the stuff around, you know, you have context, and then you kind of move towards focus. And that's kind of a very different way of thinking. And I'm not sure that screen reader manufacturers can think about how to, you know, move in this kind of upside down world where you get context before focus, as opposed to the world they're familiar with, which gives you focus before context.
I feel like too, you know, looking at multi-line displays, it may not necessarily be right, the text that's under your finger. Maybe you want the bottom line to be a status line. Maybe you want the whole display to be a dashboard that's displaying a whole bunch of information that's being updated. There's a lot of different ways that even the same information in the same app, people might want to configure it differently, right?
Yeah, and that context too will change depending on what you're doing, right? Because if you're working with an Excel sheet, for instance, you might want to be able to see, oh, let me give me an overview of everything. Let's see what, how many rows and columns and which ones are filled and so on. And then you might want to, that could be even not even Braille. It could be just a dot display.
Yeah.
And then you could zoom in and look at any column or any row. Then once you go, okay, I want to do this. I want to move this here. I want
That's lock column A.
Yeah, exactly. And just kind of think in a completely different way to the way that screen readers are allowing us to think right now.
A lot of fascinating ideas for this as far as looking with screen readers, looking with other things. Are you focusing mostly on text at the moment, or are you thinking towards graphics as well?
Yeah, I'd say graphics is in the back of our mind, and we actually started as a company with that. I'll say, I mean, it was in the forefront of our mind, but we at the moment are very laser focused on Braille. Our device that we're sharing today is a multi-line Braille display. I mean, the nice thing is we have the capability under the hood to do eventually what is a kind of uniform dot tactile graphics display. But we just recognize that there's a hole, there's a gap in the market. Multi-line Braille, I think, is something that people want and something that we can provide and are hoping to be able to sell a product to fill that need. And so that's where our focus is. We can't obviously focus on everything at once. And so we've picked this and are very passionate and excited about it.
So I happen to know, since I've been over to your offices and done a little bit of research, for full disclosure, one of the things you're really thinking about is how big should this be? Is 3x24, is that just the latest idea? Are you still kind of playing with that and taking feedback this week? Or what are you thinking for the size and how much Sal's going to have?
Yeah, definitely. Still taking feedback. I mean, I'll say it's I think it's close to what we think we'll try to shoot for a first product, but definitely not, we're not settled on that yet. And for sure, our underlying technology is capable of doing, changing those dimensions quite easily. It's really, at the end of the day, it's what makes sense for the user as well as the cost point. And we have a lot of decisions still to make in both those realms. So
we kind of skimmed over the physical description. I didn't ask earlier because I wasn't sure how final of a product you are showing. But what are you showing as far as, like, how big is the display on the table and what are we looking at?
Yeah, so it's a 3-line 24-cell display. It's 8-dot Braille. And so with that, we're able to use the standard cursor, computer Braille. And then the device itself has a Perkins-style keyboard, similar to what you would find in most, refreshable Braille displays, as well as some additional keys that add functionality that's specific to it being a multi-line display. So those are ones that are new, right? They don't necessarily have a comparison to existing single-line displays. And so we're playing around with ways to utilize those in the context of rendering multiple lines and interacting with multiple lines. So that's something we're still exploring. And then as well, there are some of the more standard sort of router keys that you might expect in some devices. So
the footprint is about, what would you say?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
10x...
I think Thomas, our product lead, he said what we want to keep it to is something that's definitely smaller than a laptop. So something that would fit in front of a laptop and on a table, so that you can easily move back and forth between it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we're shooting for. The device itself right now is about an inch thick, and the size of the Braille. Gosh, I should get the dimensions, and I'll send them along to you because hard for me to.
But you can fit it in a backpack. It sounds like that's the goal,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Is it battery powered as well?
At the moment, no. No, it is not battery powered, and
is that the final goal or?
No, I should say our goal in the immediate future is to make it so that it's a desktop style device. So
USB powered.
Yep, USB connected. So it connect to a computer via USB or Bluetooth. And it would be tethered to a unit nearby that's helping provide the power and the air, which we didn't get into, but the underlying technology and how it works is dependent on that.
Well, let's get into that.
Yeah.
Compressed air. Yeah.
So yeah, compressed air. So what is exactly happening? I know you can't tell your trade secrets, but you talk about air and bubbles and things like that. So what is happening there?
Yeah, just that. So I mean, under the pins that you can feel on the surface, which are just rigid pins that feel just like the piezo ones that are out there, there are these little bubbles that push up them up and down. Those bubbles are driven by compressed air. And at the moment, what's doing the compressing of the air is a little box that sits a distance away from the device itself. And so you can kind of think of it as like a power brick that you would have your laptop, powered with. So this is something that sits, 3 to 6 feet away from your device. And can kind of hum along and is white noisy and is separate from the device itself. And so kind of separates those two things. Yep.
Okay, yeah. So how much noise does it make? Or What is the refresh rate like?
Refresh rate and noise, two separate things there. But the noise is something that we're very open about. You know, we know that that's something that needs to be mitigated, and trying to find ways of reducing that as much as possible. And you've certainly, you know, gotten to experience different degrees of that. And, you know, in the end, we know what we need to get to make it a viable product, is something that's not going to be annoying. Like a little bit of background hum is okay, but something that's clinking and clanking away is just not going to work. So, and then, yeah, refresh rate wise, you know, yeah, definitely just, you know, completely different from the issue of noise and the compressor. But I think right now we're sitting at definitely under 1 second for a full refresh. The thing I'd like to note there is that we haven't gotten any comments about it. That's kind of what I think about, is, you know, if someone's starting to say like, ooh, like this is really slow, that makes me scared. But as of, you know, we haven't demoed it for too long today, but yeah, so far so good in terms of how people feel about it. Maybe I'll ask some more focused questions on that though, now that you've put it in my head.
So this is your first day and a half and your first CSUN. How has the experience been, and have you learned anything that you were maybe surprised to learn from customers so far, as far as their impressions?
Jill?
I think everybody's really pleasantly surprised by the Braille. And of course, always when you bring a Braille display anywhere, you're nervous about that.
Because
it's the, you know, the Braille ultimately has to feel right, because that's the product. And, we, you know, everybody has commented and said it feels really nice. So that, I think, is great. And people do like the touch feature, like the cursor routing, double-tap cursor routing feature. And so, yeah, and people do comment about the fact that it does need a compressor. So that's the downside. But other than that, I think people are very positive and very supportive and really want to see the product succeed. And so that's what we're learning, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, from a personal standpoint, I'm just really happy to be able to bring the team here, and we've worked very hard on what we've brought, and it's just good to see people liking it, you know, and getting a chance to finally, I mean, again, I've been working on this for so long, and Sheila as well, and yeah, it's just really exciting to be able to share it with
people.
It
has to be a good feeling, right? Yeah, just even when the hall opens up for the first time, and yeah, that just has to be.
And I think for the back office team, like the engineering team too, they're all with us here, and they're all helping to demo.
Yeah.
And for them, it's such a, you know, at the end of at least this part of the project, to see it out in the hands of the people that they, you know, they want to serve and they want to reach, for them, I think, has been a really great
lots of
great
success
experience.
And also probably lots of things to take back by the time
absolutely,
you get to the end of
yes.
this.
Oh, yeah.
Lots
work is not done yet.
No, by no means.
Well, so what is the timeline looking at as far as the work to do and then potential release?
Yeah. So, I mean, we are really focused right now on trying to get what we're calling a pre-production prototype done by this summer. So what we brought today is the, you know, the closest thing that we think to what a product would look like. We're gonna go back home and after this, take what feedback that we got and essentially try to get to a point where we know what it is that the first product will look like. And then by the end of the year, be in a position to manufacture that product and try to sell our first, you know, 10 to 100 devices in the next year.
Any idea on the price point yet?
We do not have a price point, and I know that's obviously a pretty important one, but, you know, I don't anticipate it being in the $1,000 range, but I also don't anticipate it being at over $10,000 either. So, I mean, it's going to be, you know, similar to the devices that are on the market today, and that's one thing that, yeah, oh, sorry, there's someone over here with a, like a robot rolling around our floor here that's just bumping into us.
I love it.
But yeah, the price point is something that we still have to figure out, so.
Very cool. If people want to get more information about new haptics and follow the development, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, which is just newhaptics.com. That's newhaptics.com. And there you can find a contact page if you ever want to get in touch with us. And that's probably the best way, because all those emails just come directly to me, so.
Awesome, thank you so much, both of you. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having us. Appreciate it.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2024.